When you haven't found love, it can feel like everyone else has. It's in every movie, every song, and all the PDA. Looking for love sucks. Thankfully, California Psychics can give you the guidance you need to find the one. We guarantee, if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com and experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
Yes, indeed, and as promised, I am joined this morning by Master Gardener Teresa Rooney to answer all those lawn and garden questions. Teresa, good morning.
Good morning.
Kind of a nice morning. It's going to be a little cloudy today, but still 77, comfortable, but warming up. Heard that forecast. We're going to have another, you know, upper 80 kind of a week this week.
Yes, so those are kind of warm.
What's been going on in your garden these days?
Oh, the weeds are doing so wonderfully. It's amazing. Yeah. It looks like a jungle. It's lush and gorgeous, and I've just about given up.
Yeah, I took some time out this week to finally to get somewhat of a handle, but you're right. It's they've totally permeated the yard, it seems like.
They certainly have. They've greened everything up, and I'm sure everyone's lawns are just going like crazy with the moisture and the heat, and yeah.
This might seem like a silly question, thinking about as I'm walking around my yard looking at all the weeds. Are these, I don't mean quack grass or something, but are these weeds that we're seeing annuals? I hope they're not perennials.
It depends on what you're seeing, of course.
Yeah.
Many of them are perennials, not all of them. Like your crabgrass isn't perennial and things like that. Dandelions are perennial. Things like that. So it really depends. So that's a good point. You need to figure out, you know, if you're looking at your lawn, you're going, whoa, it's really weedy. Figure out which weeds you have first and then figure out how you want to treat it. If you have to treat it, maybe you just want to wait till they die or take care of them a little later in August and then overseed at that time. Otherwise, you know, the Extension website has a great information on reclaiming your lawn and how to fix it and when it gets to the point of no return, so you have to start over. So there's a lot of information on there in case you're seeing non-grass kind of plants out in your lawn. So I don't want to call them weeds because some of them are quite beneficial, but
okay. You know. I was looking at the rows of fertilizer and weed and feed, mm-hmm. but specifically thinking about yards now, lawns, mm-hmm. and here we are July, 19th?
Yep.
And I'm looking at this bag of weed and feed. Now, when should one use weed and feed?
Well, you wouldn't want to use it when it's really hot. And although, here's a caveat, I don't have a lawn.
That's true. I remember that now.
But I look at how the plants react and how they grow and how products work. I think about it that way. And to me, a weed and feed doesn't seem the best way to handle a problem because, first of all, it's pelletized. So the herbicide on there has to sit on a plant long enough to be, and the plant has to be moist enough so that the product can like start to break down and become absorbed by the leaves. And I don't know how long that happens on a lawn because lawns dry out pretty quickly. How do you get the product to stay on the plant? So to me, it would be better to take a spray bottle with a liquid weed killer and spot treat if I needed to, and then overseed at that time, even though overseeding in the middle of summer is really hard because it's hot. It's tough on those little grass plants, trying to keep the seeds moist enough to germinate. Some seeds germinate in 3 days, some germinate in 28 days. So are you going to be able to keep that lawn moist for 28 days? I don't know in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
So that's my opinion. And then if the weed and feed falls off of the plants it's supposed to kill, there's a fertilizer in there. So now when the rains come, it's going to break down and fertilize the weeds.
That's right.
So it's just like
good point.
That doesn't seem like the most efficient way to kill weeds, in my opinion. That's just me thinking it through and not having a lawn. So
that's a good, very good point, actually. I want to invite our listeners, Teresa, to join in via text or phone call. If you want to call and chat with Teresa, great. If you want to just send a text like some folks are doing, 651-461-9226. Speaking of phones, let's grab a phone call. Lynn, okay, calling in from Little Falls, I believe, this morning. Thank you, Lynn. What's your question for Teresa?
My question is, in our courtyard, we have a huge crabapple tree, and it was totally full of blossoms again this year. Last year, we had fruit on it. This year, now, we have yellowing leaves on it and no fruit as started.
Mm-hmm. So, Lynn, what you might be seeing is if last year it was really heavily fruiting, it used a lot of energy last year. So it may have had energy to flower, but not enough energy to bring a lot of those flowers, if they got pollinated, to have fruit. It could also be that the bees weren't flying and you didn't get pollination because we had too much rain or it was too cold for the bees to fly. That could impact it too. The yellowing, what you're seeing might be apple scab because we did have a very wet spring, and that's a fungal disease that can attack apple trees and other trees, and it just causes leaves to yellow and then they fall off. We missed it for a number of years with all of the droughts we had, but last year we saw it again coming back because we had that wet spring. So I would first of all figure out if your tree does have apple scab, how bad it looks, and go to the extension website and read up on apple scab, S-C-A-B as in boy. It doesn't normally kill the tree, and it could just be that your tree will then fruit again heavily next year if it does flower out, and we get pollinators up there for you. Good luck with that, Lynn.
Teresa, a couple of Japanese beetle questions or comments. This one says, for your information, Japanese beetle season is here. In the past, they've destroyed roses. This texter tried something different this year, put one of the pheromone traps on the opposite side of my yard in the tree. The trap is filling up and only half a dozen or less per day on roses. And the other comment, there seems to be a significant drop-off in Japanese beetles this year. Where have they gone and will they stay gone?
Okay, so first of all, I want everybody to head to the Extension website because they say, wait, when you see Japanese beetles, don't kill them. Okay, now that you all are in shock, what you want to look for is you want to find little white dots on the Japanese beetles, not just the dots that they have around, but some other dots. It'll be a little egg sac, and that actually is the egg sac of the winsome fly, which will then hatch, and the little critters burrow into the beetles, and they kill the beetles. So it helps to decimate the population, if I remember that correctly. Next of all, the university suggests not using the pheromone traps because the traps actually attract more beetles to your yard. The beetles that get caught in the traps and killed in the traps are the weaker beetles. The stronger beetles climb out, so you're actually helping the population become stronger. So we don't really want to do that. And it could be that, yes, you're seeing a lot of beetles in the traps, but those beetles might not have been hitting your roses anyway. Another thing that we're seeing is there's not as many Japanese beetles. They're more in pockets. And this is something you normally expect when a population first explodes, and then like winsome flies and other things come into play that helps to suppress the population and even it out a little bit. So it's that happens over time in an ecosystem when you get an invasive insect or an aggressive insect like that. So it's a good thing. It's partially because of the moisture in the soil and people taking care of their lawns and not having as many lawns, et cetera, et cetera. It's all a bunch of different factors playing in. But I suggest everyone read the Japanese beetle article on the Extension website because they are telling you something. If you could just look and find those little flies, those little eggs on the Japanese beetles, then you know that, okay, the predator is actually, you want to give life to that predator so it can impact the Japanese beetle population.
Very good. Teresa, hang on. We'll take a bit of a break here. I want to alert Barbara. You're going to be next on the phone, Barbara, so hang on. And more text questions will be answered as well. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney with us this morning on our Smart Garden Show, brought to us by Great Garage Floors. Stay with us. If you're just joining us, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those questions here in our Smart Garden Show this Saturday morning. Either phone call or text, 651-461-9226. Teresa, we promised Barbara she would be next. Barbara from New Brighton. Thanks for hanging on, Barbara. What's your question for Teresa?
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two quick questions. One is, what is a good natural or organic deer repellent other than buying the products at the store that smell awful and are probably chemicals?
Okay. So, Barbara, thanks for waiting. I know you had to wait through the commercials. Physical barriers are a good repellent. Hanging strips of like a white T-shirt on fences about deer tail height is good. The wind will flip that around, and it looks like a white tail flipping up their tail to warn the rest of the deer not to come by, to run. There might be danger. Otherwise, you can try making your own smelly repellents. The Extension website has some information. You would use garlic or a strong smelling spice that might work. Deer netting is also a real good thing to try if you don't want to have to buy chemicals. And I can understand that you don't want to have to buy something at the store. You can mix up some of your own. I would go with the Extension website suggestion rather than what you might find on Instagram or Pinterest or something like that, because those aren't very well tested. Change it up occasionally, like every 2 or 3 weeks, to get a different fragrance out there. It just keeps the deer on their toes or on their hooves, so to speak. You can also lay chicken wire on the ground where the deer normally walk, and at night that will move as they walk on it, and it will be kind of scary for them, so they may stop coming to your yard. So, you know, deer netting exclusion works the best if you possibly can. And if you're dealing with deer, Barbara, I'm sorry, good luck. That's a tough one.
All right. Looking at a text, Creeping Charlie text. Says, I have Creeping Charlie in and around my Lily of the Valley. Now, if I use Roundup, texter says, outside the bed, could this kill my lilies?
Well, Roundup's a contact poison, so you want to make sure you're using the right Roundup. If it's going outside of the bed and you're not spraying it on your lilies, they should be the Lily of the Valley. It should be okay. Just don't spray it on your plants because it will kill everything. And read and follow the label instructions. If it's too hot, rainy, etc., etc.
Okay. Let's see, another one that came in earlier this morning. Are witches' brooms always a sign of an infection that will kill a plant, lilacs in particular? Could environmental conditions like low sunlight, poor soil, cause witches' brooms? And what is that?
A witch's broom, it's like an old-fashioned witch's broom looks like, a bunch of twigs all tied together. So what happens is something damages the growing point of a plant, and suddenly you get this huge growth spurt with all these extra little stems coming out. So it looks like a broom at the end. You have the normal stem, and then all of a sudden you have this huge number of stems coming out of one place. It's often caused by a physical damage to the actual plant tips, growing tips itself. A snowblower, hitting that growing point with the snow and the ice chips and everything else that comes off. Something like that, a sanding truck hitting their growing point. That's often where you'll see it on the freeways. It could be an infection. It normally does not kill the plant, though. You can just prune it out. It should be just fine.
Very good. Always like to remind our listeners, if they haven't yet, to get to the University of Minnesota website, extension.umn.edu, some great information. In fact, I was using it a couple of times this past week.
See, Denny walks the walk and talks the talk.
There's so much good. I was looking for a couple of issues, trees for one. Mm-hmm. And there's so much. Our friends who are on this show and their colleagues at the U just put in a whole lot of work.
I take no credit for it at all. I understand none of the work. Yeah,
but they at the U. And in fact, I'd be willing to say this is probably one of the better extension sites in the country. I think
Denny,
I'm safe
to
say
that. It really is. It's a wonderful extension site. When I talk to people, even from outside of Minnesota, I'll suggest going to the University of Minnesota website because it is so, it's so varied and so wide and broad-based, and they really do really good work. Just like today, you can go and find out what's on the July Garden checklist. That's where you'll find out why not to kill Japanese beetles. You know, you can contact Master Gardeners on the extension website. You can send them an email, up to 3 pictures, to help them help you figure out a problem you may be having. And down near the bottom of the Yard and Garden page, there's a number of events that are happening. You can find out. You can, let's see now, go to Pollinator Party at the Lindale Plant Park Gardens. Do beekeeping for veterans out at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. Pollinators in Woodlands up in Park Rapids. There's a lot of events. Many of them are free, lots of classes, and just so much information. And I cannot thank Julie and her crew enough for the plant elements of design. That part of the website is just amazing. If you're looking for plants, if you need some help with a design, just some design information, or to find a plant that will work in that particular area that you have in your mind, what you want it to look like, you can key in features and it'll help you find plants if there's one available.
Excellent place. Yeah,
it's an amazing website.
It really
so
is.
So I thank all the people at the extension site. You guys do a good job. Kudos to you.
Teresa, let's grab one more text before we look at that weather forecast. Listener says, some of my Wajula shrubs have branches with black wilted leaves. What could cause this is one question. And what should I do with the debris and the shrubs? Could I restore them?
You can restore them. What you can do is I would first either pluck off the leaves that are wilted. They could have been hit by strong winds, hail, just enough to break the leaf connection to the plant itself, and just then the leaf wilts. It could have been hit by a drift of an herbicide that someone, you know, up to 2 or 3 miles away could be spraying if they're not doing it properly. On a windy day, it can drift and hit your plants. It could have been broken by squirrels, just doing weird squirrel stuff, running around like little lunatics out there. So what you want to do is, you know, take your pruners and start at the tip of the branch. And if you cut off the tip of the branch and you see that it's still green, that means the branch will leaf out again. It's absolutely no problem. If the branch has been broken further down, or if there's a borer in there or something further down, you can keep pruning back to where you see green on that branch, and then it should leaf out from there. You can always often also talk to a master gardener on the extension website via email, or bring a branch with the leaves that are wilted. Bring that to a farmer's market where a lot of master gardeners will be. We're at a lot of farmer's markets here in the Twin Cities. So if you know where master gardeners are, or if your county has a master gardening day, you can bring it to a master gardener and they might be able to look at it and tell you what's wrong right away.
Very good.
Good luck.
Hang on, Teresa.
Okay.
We'll have a look at that weather forecast and be back with the second half of our Smart Garden Show, brought to us by Great Garage Floors. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering all those lawn and garden questions today on our Saturday show. We're here every Saturday, by the way, in the 8 o'clock hour, brought to us by Great Garage Floors. As you heard, Teresa, lots of questions. So maybe we're going to have a little bit of a lightning round here.
Let's do that.
All right. Shrub rose. A few years ago, texture says it had galls all over it. I cut the whole bush down to the ground. It grew back nicely last year, but now full of galls again. Should I just cut it back again? And what causes this kind of growth?
I believe galls are usually a little insect living in there. And it just causes damage to the plant. You can go ahead and cut it back. Do it before the 1st of August so the plant can then go into dormancy as normal. So let it flower as long as it's flowering, and then just make sure you give it a good haircut either the 1st of August or when it comes out of dormancy in the spring next year.
See, how did all the plant sale action go?
Oh, thank you. Well, actually, it wasn't a sale. We had our garden tour.
A tour. I'm sorry.
Yes. And I want to
We've had sales before, but this is
We've had sales before and tours. And, oh, my goodness, everything. But our Master Gardener Learning Garden Tour here in Hennepin County was a wonderful success, even though it was like 2,000 degrees outside. People came out, supported the Master Gardener program, and I hope you learned a lot. We enjoyed having you, and I thank each and every one of you, not physically, of course, but I thank you all for supporting the Master Gardeners, because it means a lot to us to have you visit our gardens and learn with us, and then support the program so we can continue to bring research-based information to our community. So thank you, everybody. It was a great tour.
You guys are educators. That's what you do.
That's what we do. We talk plants, and you help enable our addiction, and we appreciate it. Thank you.
Texter says this, I heard July is the month to treat grubs. Can you please explain a little on how to do that?
Okay, so first of all, you need to identify that you actually have grub problems in your lawns. Remember that if they are Japanese beetles or whatever, just because you have grubs in your lawn does not mean you will have Japanese beetles. They can fly up to 3 miles away, so it's just the grubs can come from anywhere. Anyway, so you have Japanese beetles, you've pulled back the you've researched it, you found the little beetles, you've identified them, you figured out how big they are, and now you can treat it with a product that will be to kill grubs. It's a granular product that you will water into your lawn. You want to do it at the right time, when the grubs are close enough to the surface, when the grubs are young enough to still be feeding on the grass roots in your lawn. If the grubs are too big and they're starting to pupate and turn into the adult beetles, they stop feeding, the poison will not help them or will not kill them. So it's a waste of your time and effort. If you don't have Japanese beetles, but you have a disease in the lawn, putting down a grub killer will not help the disease go away. So you have to identify the problem. The Extension website has an excellent page on that, and I suggest that you look at that and learn more about grubs than you ever wanted to know before, and then figure out what to do and how to keep your lawn nice and healthy, kill the grubs, and then reseed over again in the fall.
Very good. A listener sent this text in. About 3 weeks ago, I had some landscaping done, and they dug up a dogwood that was in a very bad spot. It has a 5-foot stem. I was unable to get it replanted. It's been in a bucket. I've dumped water on the roots every day. It looks dead. I think it's worth trying to plant anyway, and should I cut off that long stem?
I would cut off the long stems, and I would replant it. Try to repot. Yes, do plant it again. Words obviously a problem this morning. Go ahead and try to replant it again. Cut off the dead. You might want to start at the top of that stem or these stems and see if there's any green growth, and just cut down until you find some green growth. If it's a 5-foot stem and you find green growth at 3.5 or 4 feet, you could still cut it down a little bit, but then you'll know that there's still life in your plant. Go ahead, put it in, and treat it very gently for this first year. Good luck with that.
Texas says, Denny, would you ask Teresa if the weed corn speedwell that's in my lawn is a perennial? I've been trying to pull all of it.
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know what that weed is. So I'm going to do some research, let's go to the next question. I've never heard of corn speedwell.
All right, I'll let you do that during the break. We can do a little research. Another text says, what's the most effective way to trim a Virginia creeper?
Oh, I'm sorry. I laughed out loud. Virginia creeper is a very aggressive weed. They want to trim it, did they say?
Yes.
You could hack it back to the ground if you want to. It's a monster. It will just grow and be crazy. So go ahead and go ahead and trim it as you want to, just to whatever you want to do.
Okay. I have, Texter says, a million aphids on my milkweed. I hope some birds will come and eat them. What are the chances?
Well, it's a good chance. The ladybugs will probably come and eat them too. It's always a hard one for the homeowner when you have something like aphids on your plants, because the aphids do stress the plants. They normally do not kill them, but they could knock them back a lot. you can't interfere with just spraying them with water on a nice sunny day. Go out there and then turn the hose on full blast and spray the aphids with water. They fall off of the plant and not all of them will come back again. However, if you want things like birds and ladybugs and things like that to eat them, the pest population has to be big enough to attract those predators, and that means you have to be willing to accept some damage. It's just a hard thing to do, but spraying off with water knocks off a lot of them. Do it on a bright sunny day because the aphids aren't expecting it. On a day like today when it's a little overcast, they're going to be expecting rain, so they just hold on really tight. So just do it on a day where they don't expect it, and that's a good thing that you can do if they're impacting your milkweed. Good luck with that.
This listener, Teresa, would like to turn my boulevard into a bee-friendly flower area rather than plant individual plants. Is there a seed mix of native flowers that can be used so that's easier to maintain?
There are seed mixes you could do. It's hard because seeds, if you want a boulevard that looks nice and beautiful and kind of orderly, and you get a packet of mixed seeds, that means you have plants coming up next to each other that you can't identify until they start to flower, and then maybe they don't look good together, or there's only one of that flower and one of that flower rather than a clump of monarda and a clump of grass and a clump of cone flowers. You have all of this chaos out there. It's hard because you don't know what's weeds when they're coming up. So sometimes it's better just to mulch the area, you know, remove as much weeds as you can, mulch the area with like a wood chip mulch or something, a double shredded wood chip mulch, and then just plant in clumps of your favorite plants and start out that way. If you want to try, you can easily get seed mixes at your garden centers and maybe try a small area of a seed mix so you can see what you like the look of better. But it's hard for the average person to keep up with the weeding of those seed mixes.
All right. Listener says this via text, what can I use to get rid of white mold and black spot infestation on my peony plants?
Okay, you're probably seeing powdery mildew on your peony plant. Again, that's not going to impact the plant that much. If it's a healthy plant, it's just fine. You can spray it with free water, with just plain water on a bright sunny day. It'll dry up. However, once the leaves get damp again with the heavy dews that we have and the humid weather that we have, the infection can just come back again. Next year you may want to start with a fungal spray. And then they said white spots?
Yes. White mold and black spots.
Oh, black spots. Okay. And the same, both of those things are problems with the heavy humid weather that we have. If you can get some more air circulation around those plants, that will help. If it doesn't really impact the plants, it just makes them look a little bad. Next year, if you see that it's happening again, maybe then the following year, if you know that we had another wet spring, you start with a fungicide spray. And again, read and follow the labels.
All right. Grabbing some phone calls. I know we have to break momentarily. Let me grab one. Karen is calling in from Hastings, I believe, this morning. Karen, thank you for hanging on. What's your question for Teresa?
We have about 50 feet of on a boulevard in front of the church of hydrangeas. I call them snowball hydrangeas. They have gotten huge over the years and have kind of overgrown their area. And I'd really like to just cut them in half. I don't know when to do that or if I just go with a shovel and just break them and really get rid of the roots and everything to eliminate some of them. If you could help me, I'd really appreciate it.
Sure. Karen, right? Okay, so what you want to do is first figure out if you're looking at an Annabelle hydrangea or if you're looking at a spirea, which is also called a snowball hydrangea. They're different plants. The one is more clumpy, and you could prune that back if you want to cut out part of it. That's okay, too. The Annabelle hydrangea, that one suckers, and you can just cut that back wherever you want with a spade and just remove that plant to bring it back down to size.
All right, very good. We're going to be back with more phone calls and text questions for Master Gardener Teresa Rooney here on our Smart Garden Show, brought to us every week by Great Garage Floors. And back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those questions via phone and text. Speaking of phones, Teresa, Mark in Hudson has been waiting there. We appreciate your patience, Mark. What is your question?
The question is the Japanese beetles and fruit trees and spray. I have 25 fruit trees, and they attack the plum trees. What is a good spray for killing the Japanese beetles?
Mark, that's a really good question, and I'm going to refer you to the Extension website because you do have to be careful that you can use it on edible plants like your plum tree. So I'm going to defer you to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and it's a good source. You'll find out more there. Mm-hmm. Listener via text said, how high a fence do you have to keep the rabbits from coming to dinner?
You know, the rabbits, you know, a 2-foot fence should work fine. However, that's not going to protect the plants in the wintertime. So if you're trying to protect trees and shrubs, you probably want to go a little higher depending upon the snow. Remember, once the bunnies know something's there, they'll crawl under the fence, so you have to be careful of that, too. So just be aware of it. Put up your fence first. That's usually the easiest thing to do.
Okay. This listener says, I've had hundreds of seedling crab trees sprouting in the lawn beneath my mature crab tree. Will they die out over the summer as I mow over them, or do I need to pull them out manually?
Nope, just mow them. We would be under a huge forest if we didn't mow our lawns. You'd be surprised how many tree seedlings you cut every time you mow your lawn.
Okay. This texter just puts down goldenrod. Good or bad, keep it or get rid of it.
I personally love goldenrod. It's a wonderful plant for our pollinators. It does not cause hay fever. That's the ragweed, which is blooming at the same time, and goldenrod gets the hit. Its pollen is way too heavy to be going through the air. There is a Canadian goldenrod, I think it is, that might be a little aggressive and you may want to take out. But I have a zigzag goldenrod, which blooms in the shade. It does self-seed very easily, but those seedlings are easy to pull. Most goldenrod, like fireworks, is absolutely stunning in the garden.
Excellent. This listener wants to know, how do I get rid of rogue chives popping up everywhere? I can dig out the ones in soil, but some are growing in rock retaining wall.
You know, you could use a weed killer on those. I believe you would want to use maybe a grass killer. That would be because of the chive plant is, I believe it's a monocot. And then if you do have chives in your yard, just make sure that you are deadheading before the flowers go to seed. Use the flowers in your salads or just deadhead them before they start producing seeds.
Okay.
Can I share the corn speedwell?
Oh, yeah. You did some research during the break. Yeah. By all means.
Corn speedwell is a Veronica arvensis, and it seems to be an annual, but it self-seeds very readily. Thicken up your lawn. That will really help. You may also want to use a pre-emergent broadleaf pre-emergent on your lawn in the spring at a certain time to stop any seeds that did fall. Otherwise, just thicken up your lawn really well in the fall, and you should be able to get ahead of it. Good luck with that.
Yeah, thanks for checking on that. Appreciate that. Listener Teresa wants to know, what is making my hydrangea leaves curl up and the plants hardly have any flowers?
The leaves curling up, there's little critters, little insects, that they're leaf rollers, and they just kind of curl up and they live in there like a little sleeping bag. So that's what's happening there. It doesn't normally hurt the plant. As to it not flowering, it could just be that it didn't get enough energy over the winter. It was hit by the winter, or maybe it's not enough sun in that area. It's got shadier. I don't think the leaf rollers should have much impact on the flowers.
Okay. A couple of minutes to go in the show. If you were the person to repopulate a neighborhood decimated by emerald ash borer, what trees would you plant? Texter wants to know.
Well, first I'd go to the Extension website and the DNR website, and I would find some information, and I would repopulate it with probably about 10 or 15 varieties of trees, if I could find that many, and try to get a very, very diverse forest in there. That's what I would personally do. I'd be putting in Kentucky coffee trees and maybe not magnolias because of the issues, but Kentucky coffee trees. I would not be planting maples. I'd be planting all the other trees, maybe some beech and some dogwoods and things like that. Not the Japanese dogwoods, but dogwood shrubs, some service berries, things like that. I try to get some native plants in there, and then look to bring in some plants that are maybe a zone 5, because we're getting warmer, to anticipate the future. So that's why I'd go to both the Extension website and the DNR website to find out trees for our urban forests.
In the last minute and a half or so, Texter wants to know, what do you think of cocoa bean mulch?
Cocoa bean mulch is absolutely wonderful. If you have dogs, do not use it. The theobromine, the coconut, the chocolate actually decomposes, and that theobromine can kill your dogs. So if it's out in a public area where dogs can be walking by, please don't use it. Otherwise, it does. It's a wonderful mulch. Put a very thin layer, and understand it molds very easily as it breaks down. Just fluff it up if you don't like the look of the mold on it. It'll probably disintegrate within a year, but it's a beautiful mulch.
Teresa, we are plumb out of time. Let's remind our listeners, first of all, get to the Arboretum whenever you can.
Get to the Arb. There's so much going on out there. Get to the Arb.
And get to the Extension website, which is?
extension.umn.edu, and also look for Master Gardeners everywhere in your community.
Absolutely. Thank you for all the work you
thanks,
do, Teresa,
Danny.
And thanks for your help every Saturday you're on. Thank you.
Thank
so much
you.
Fun. Teresa Rooney, Master Gardener, Teresa Rooney.